Welcome to the Mad Trio podcast. This week we have the California Pariah. We have James the Fat Man Stevens.
Hello.
And this is try number three for this week's episode. Unfortunately, I had a technical error and I lost the first 30 minutes of the show. I had a good friend of mine on who I haven't talked to in 20 years.
It's Ryan's fault.
A gentleman by the name of Brian Luke. Brian, my humble apologies about losing your section of the show. Nobody's as mad about it as me. So the most interesting story that I've read probably in the last 24 hours is 254 pounds of fentanyl was captured. Was it captured? Yeah, it was taken on the border. It was found.
Confiscated.
Confiscated. Thank you. It was confiscated on the U.S. border headed to Arizona. And from everything I've read, fentanyl is incredibly deadly.
Yeah. I'm more curious, like, was it just, what border?
Canadian-American?
Oh, it was Mexico?
Mexico, yeah, because it was a Mexican produce truck going to the Arizona, I'm assuming. So it was probably going through the U.S., Customs and Border Controls.
Yeah, well, they try to move in quite a bit, so that's a shit ton of fentanyl, no matter how you look at it, though.
I just don't get, I mean, I guess I could see it in, I don't know, like, where do they get it? Is there somebody manufacturing it? Is it legit fentanyl? I mean, because that's a lot of pills for anybody.
Well, yeah, it would just be determined from where it's coming from. If it's still in Mexico, then it probably is.
So it's cut with something, you think?
Yeah, I would think so. But if it's coming from, I don't know. I really don't know where it'd be. Well, I guess Mexico does have the technology to be doing that, you know, so it could be legit.
I know, but on the other hand, there was a gentleman around here, and I might be using the term gentleman loosely. When he was arrested, he got caught in his house having an IV bag full of fentanyl. Like, how do you get a hold of that? And you're in the U.S. Fentanyl's like the number one killer. I'm surprised it's not behind lock and key and gunpoint.
There's always people that are going to be able to circumvent that in some way.
But how do you walk out with a bag of fentanyl? I mean,
up your ass, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, my assumption is it's
kind of uncomfortable. Don't fart.
You're going to get stoned. It's like drinking upside down. My first thought, it was, you know, it had to be a woman. And this is the only reason I'm saying so is women normally carry purses.
The term he's looking for is pouched.
No, because my thought was, you know, the woman, I'm assuming the woman took it, you know, had it in her purse or on her person.
Because most places check purses now.
But a hospital? This is assumption 100% because nothing's come out.
If she's working in the section where she has access to drugs like fentanyl, codeine, basically any of the medicinal heroin.
Opioids.
Any of the opioid types things. There's going to be some type of check and balance system. You know? Yeah,
they would have to be.
There's always things like that, but there's always people that are smart enough to work around it.
Yeah, but it's so, I don't know, it's so odd. I just don't know, like, how do you get that? That's the one thing I don't understand is how you would do that.
Creatively?
Yeah.
It's about all you got. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just surprised that could happen, that somebody could smuggle a giant bag of fentanyl. But on the other hand, I guess it really wouldn't be that hard if, you know, sorry, I'm kind of thinking as I'm talking, that it comes down to somebody just wanting money. If somebody's willing to take the risk and figure out how to do it, then they're going to do it. But what do you do?
What do you mean, what do you do?
I mean, what do you do with the raw bag of fentanyl? So you have this liquid, basically it's liquid death, because any amount of that without really knowing what you're doing is going to kill you. So what do you do with it? Do you bake it down? Do you turn it into vials? I mean, what exactly do you do with a giant liquid bag?
I'm sure there is somebody who would buy it up. You would have to get in contact with somebody who knows somebody type thing, unless... I was going to say, unless you know somebody right off the bat, I mean...
And somebody who's willing to take the risk of having a major felony.
Well, yeah, even like taking it out of there is going to be a major felony no matter what.
Well, because was... Now, this is a guess. Because before this epidemic of fentanyl deaths, I'd never heard of it. Now, was taking fentanyl from a hospital a felony before? My assumption would be yes, but I really don't know.
I would have to assume yes, because, I mean, they're going to categorize all drugs by different types, right?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Matt Brewer on the phone from a couple of weeks back. Matt, how's it going? What? Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. My phone's having issues. What did you say?
I said, I just got home. It's my Friday. I've got a whiskey. It's a good day.
Ooh, congratulations.
All right.
So we were talking about, they just found 254 pounds of fentanyl coming in from the Mexico border. And so we were talking about how in my local area, somebody was caught with an IV bag full of fentanyl. And it's kind of where you're caught up with our conversation.
That's a lot of fentanyl.
Yeah, because we were trying
to simply put.
You know, say for me, I'd rather have whiskey and a cigar. Like, I don't understand what exactly are you going to do with that much? I'm confused, because if they say like 2 milligrams can kill you, you have a giant IV bag. I mean, you're going to have a party with 2 million of your closest friends.
I mean, I tell you what I do, but that would make me admitting to a felony on air, and I do not want to do that.
It's not, I wouldn't say technically admitting to a felony. It's using your imagination in the course of a broadcast.
Oh, well, I mean, if I had to do something,
use the word hypothetically.
Hypothetically, I'd probably sell it. I'm going to be completely honest.
But hypothetically, how would you go about doing that?
I don't know, but that's
what I'm saying. I don't know anybody who would be willing to take the chance of handling it enough
if it was back in my high school days, like I was the clean kid, but I knew everybody, if I needed anything, I knew the people to talk to, you know, I would have known the people to say, hey, what do you do with that? But you know, I really don't understand it. Another interesting piece of news that I found more fascinating for anything, El Chapo is refusing to go on a stand for his defense in his trial. My assumption on that would be because it would make him look guilty. Because it's like having, you know, John Wayne Gacy on the stand and saying, oh, I really enjoy being around children. Mm. It's going to make him look guilty. So I'm fascinated because I wanted to hear him go on trial. I would have taken the day off if they actually publicly broadcast it just to hear what he says.
What do you expect him to say? I mean, well, I guess it would be more of what questions does the prosecution want to propose to him, but...
Well, I mean, you don't... here's the reason why, because you don't normally hear interviews with somebody in that position. John Gotti...
Never was able to shut the hell up.
Well, but on the outside, though, the periphery, he never really talked about the nitty and gritty of what he did.
That's because he didn't do anything.
Well, because you got El Chapo, who was one of the most feared people in Mexico. I thought it would be interesting. It's like watching those, you know, in the mind of a murderer shows. You want to get into the mind of a guy to see, like, what makes him tick. And that's the reason I'd be fascinated. Like, what made him become the drug guy, to kill this guy, to be one of the most ruthless drug people since, you know, the 80s type of thing?
Well, but that goes back to the oldest argument as far as that type of thing goes, is nature versus nurture.
I mean,
he grew up in the slums of Mexico.
A true survival of the fittest.
Yeah. So, I mean, he basically jumped on the drug trade. And I mean, that's kind of the same thing with John Gotti. Is, you know, John Gotti's dad wasn't really that well to do either. He mostly gambled all of his funds away. So Gotti was really kind of mad at his dad for not providing for his family. So that's why Gotti got into the and went the route he did, is because he's looking at it as like, I'm going to provide for my family no matter what it takes.
That's true. I would have just been interested to see
Escobar. Yeah. I mean, he grew up in the slums of Colombia.
What do you think, Matt?
Mom was a prostitute.
It's funny that you mentioned Escobar, because I was going to say he's more successful than Escobar ever could have hoped to have been. But he's, when it comes to how he conducts himself, he's a lot smarter than Escobar was, because he was just like, hey, look at me. And well, El Chapo, he's like, nah.
Well, Escobar was more of the, oh, you guys want to prosecute me? Fuck you. I'm taking over the government. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's kind of the difference of it, is El Chapo's like, oh, you guys want to prosecute me? I ain't saying shit. I didn't do nothing.
Well, it also seemed like he kind of took it from a little bit from the American mob, which was the old rule of the American mob was, we don't exist. Don't say anything. Don't admit to it. We're just average people. And it seemed like to me that he was trying to, like, you know, blend in like La Casa Nostra. Everybody knew he existed, but nobody could do anything.
True.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll just find their own Henry Hill and they could get a movie deal out of it.
Isn't there a Netflix series about this?
What? The mob?
No, the El Chapo.
Yes, there is. They just started one. Yeah, I forgot about that. And there's also Narcos, which is about Escobar.
I don't know. I just couldn't imagine. And the Reign of Terror, I just couldn't. I don't know. I'm just blown away by this.
I was always amazed at the fact that, I mean, Escobar literally went and tried to wipe out the entire Colombian government because they were going to prosecute him. I mean, that just.
Because wasn't that Gotti's problem? The fact that he was too. He tried to copy the actual Godfather movies instead of doing what they traditionally did, which was
nothing. Yeah. They didn't do anything.
They blended in. they were like average Joes until you realized, hey, that guy's Jimmy the Weasel, and he's known for popping people's kneecaps off type of thing, you know?
That could be a fun job.
Jay Leno, you want to hear some pretty crazy shit. Jay Leno has an interview on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he talks about his interactions with the mob. And it's fascinating.
Pretty ballsy, even still, to be talking about the mob openly when.
Well, see, I mean,
they're still around.
Well, this is the part that I have to give a lot of respect to Jay Leno. Is he doesn't mention anybody's name who's alive. He's very careful. He only gave stories that he had interaction with. Like he said, there's this one crazy guy, and I'm going to heavily paraphrase because I don't 100% remember this one guy who's just absolutely like insane and basically dragged Jay Leno around for a day. And Jay Leno's kind of like terrified. He said, there's this golfing tournament and every hole had these hookers and skirts and leopard prints. And he says all sorts of crazy stuff would happen. So I give major props to it, because it's a part of a story you don't hear about being a comedian in like the 70s, especially when you're talking about Vegas, and it was 100% mob run, and New York.
Yeah.
And Chicago.
Yeah, and Chicago.
I got to backpedal real quick, because the Escobar thing made me laugh. I just saw a thing yesterday, and I couldn't stop giggling while I was at work. There's a pop-up burger restaurant in Australia that just opened called Pablo's Escoburgers. And the kicker is that the top bun comes out with a line of fake cocaine on top of it.
I wonder what the fake cocaine is. I'm curious.
That's what I'm kind of wondering too. I mean,
if it was me, I'd do ground up sesame seeds. Got to keep with that, you know,
opioid,
the theme. Yeah.
I was wondering if it was going to be, was it molecular gastronomy?
Oh, probably not.
you're stretching there, John.
Well, I mean, because every time you watch one of these cooking shows, these bozos are trying to mix these chemicals they find in the kitchen, and the judges are like, you didn't know how to use this, you know?
Yeah. I'm still kind of baffled at Leno even. I mean, that's ballsy.
At most, I...
I really gotta say that. I gotta give him respect on that to even like be willing to even talk about that, knowing how.
Well, here's
how quiet the mob keeps things. I mean, that's like somebody from El Chapo's thing, kind of going out and talking about they weren't Sinaloa. Were they Sinaloa? El Chapo, was he a Sinaloa cartel?
I don't remember.
Anyway, but I mean, like, I don't know.
Here's the reason.
Does Leno talk about Jimmy Hoffa?
No.
All right.
Well, here's the reason why I think he does is, A, he doesn't really say anything bad about him. He says, you don't have to say anything bad about him
to piss him off.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree, but I think the way Jay Leno sounded, it sounds like it was people because, A, he's Italian. And during that time, the mob was Italian. So he's, you know, he's already one of them. And so I think what it was just the fact that I think that Jay Leno made it sound like he respected him. So I think that's what it comes down to. He was able to talk about something that happened 30, 40 years ago because, A, half those guys are dead or in jail now. So that's the reason I think.
Yeah, but I mean, even if it's a dead and done thing, I mean, the mafia is known for.
Oh yeah, they're not for
not. I mean, they want forgiving. Silence, and I forget the actual Italian term that they use, but that's what they want. I mean, that's why I'm just kind of like I'm kind of curious, like what made him choose to talk about something like that?
It came up in conversation. So, Matt, what type of whiskey are you having? Are you having it neat or mixed?
Maker's Mark.
Oh, God, no. Funny thing, though, is I actually am drinking bourbon. I'm drinking Knob Creek.
Oh, all right.
I don't know if I've ever had Mountain
Dew. Knob.
Oh, Knob. I'm deaf, remember. I don't know if I've had that. I'm still a really big fan of Gentleman Jack. I've got this Buffalo something at home that's not too bad.
I still like Single Barrel the best.
And I'm finally glad there's another person who hates Maker's Mark as much as we do.
It's not good.
It's shit. It's literally shit.
I like cooking with it, but now that it's like $50 a bottle.
Really?
Well, when it was super cheap, I used to buy the big bottles because I would cook with it, and it added a flavor. Like all the ass flavor out of drinking it burned away.
Yeah.
Because if you drink it,
John likes to burn ass.
Why not? If you ever want to know what Maker's Mark tastes like without drinking it, find a really dirty, nasty work boot and lick the inside of it.
No, that's okay.
Well, you've drank Maker's.
Yeah.
You've had Maker's Mark.
When I was young and dumb, yeah.
You know what I think it is? I think it's that, you know, it became some stupid indie bullshit or, you know, hipster bullshit, just like Past Blue Ribbon. And I mean, yeah. It just became the cool thing to drink. It's disgusting. Both are.
The most amazing thing is like Pabst Blue Ribbon was actually at one point one of the famous brands. That the Maker's Mark has never been famous for anything.
Tasting like shit.
Yeah. Oh, so the whiskey I have at home, it's Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It's like $30, $35. It's not the greatest, but for what I'm using it, it's not too bad.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is you don't have to spend, you know, a kajillion dollars on good alcohol anymore. You know, there's a lot of, there's actually a bourbon distillery like 20 minutes from my house that does a really, really good bourbon for, you know, it's relatively inexpensive. It's like, I don't know, $20. Hmm.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
So that you just don't have it on tap? I mean, I figured you'd be like, hey, Bob, just drag the line.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want
to
die.
Just hook it to my veins.
Oh, so you're saying if you had that much access to it, you wouldn't stop drinking it.
There's a reason why I purchase expensive alcohol. Yeah.
Well, I'll be honest. Your reason for only buying expensive alcohol is the only reason why I buy expensive cigars. Like, I had a cigar last week that was like $30, $25, $30, and I do it because... Yeah. I have good taste. Good taste means I can only smoke maybe once or twice a month.
Yeah. See, that's the funny thing is I work in a call center and, you know, 95% of the people who work in a call center smoke. I don't. I have an occasional cigar, but somebody was like, why don't you just buy cigars to last a month? I'm like, because cigars are more expensive than drugs and I can't afford that kind of upkeep. So, you know,
right. Like
you got a good point there.
My favorite cigar right now, it's a limited edition, Kombucha. I can never pronounce it correctly, but it actually comes
Comanche.
In it comes in its own little box. It's a limited edition, so it says like something out of something, and they're like $25 a stick. If I had, I'd be spending way more money than I'd want to if I had one for once a month.
So I was talking with somebody the other day, and she was telling me her in-laws decided to go to Cuba. The thing is that there's no cell reception out there. There's no internet. So the only way that she can get a hold of these people is through their travel agent. And the travel agent says, well, I can call over there to go check on them. And the company out there that we have, it'll take them about 4 hours to track them down. Now, I'm like, why would you want to go if that's the case? And she said that her father-in-law likes Cuban cigars, so he went out to Cuba to go experience the cigars out there.
But if you
don't care how, I mean,
but you don't have to go to Cuba to get Cuban cigars. Like after Castro took over, all those seeds,
and that's why he wants to go out there for it.
I
just baffled me.
So why
they were going to be out there for a whole month or something like that? And I'm like,
why not get a satellite phone?
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen reasonably priced. Well, reasonably priced is still fucking high.
That's what I was going to say, a few thousand dollars probably still.
But if you're a month in the middle of nowhere or 90 miles from Florida, but if you don't have anything, it's better than nothing.
But I'm just still curious. I'm like, why would, I mean, there's a lot of people that like Cuban cigars.
Well, here's.
And the thing is I don't feel the need to ever go out to Cuba.
So,
for anything.
So what I heard, and I was listening to something, and I've read this also.
You can get rat on a stick.
That when Castro took over, a lot of the people who owned the cigar factories and the fields, they took all their seeds, went somewhere in, you know, the South America. That basically it was on the same level or around the same area of the, what's it called? It's the middle of the earth.
I know.
Where the
equator,
excuse me.
Okay.
It's about the same area on the equator. So the plants can grow the same. So they say a lot of modern tobacco is actually from, originally from Cuban seeds. They've probably been mixed and modified over the years, but they say like before, like back the, you know, the '50s and earlier, all the good cigars came from Cuba. They say now, well, Cuban cigars are good. They're not the best. That's what I've read and that's what I've heard. And, but
I've never smoked one to have a comparison, but
I've heard stories about, when I was in Canada for a family trip, you could buy them. And I've heard of people going to Mexico and getting them.
I wonder what Arnold would say. Cause I mean, he's a big cigar guy.
I know what he would say.
Well, can you understand him though?
Yeah, no, he would just go. Rah, rah, rah.
In Manitoba.
Anyway. But so I know he's actually, big cigar guys.
Wait, hold on. What was that?
It's a fun fact about that. There actually is a cigar shop just west of Austin that does sell Cubans. You have to pay cash for them.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but no, I wasn't willing to spend, you know, $35 on a cigar at the time.
John's debating it.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk off the air. I'll
send you cash.
I wouldn't mind trying them just to see. I ask my cigar guy every time I see him if he ever gets any Cubans and, you know, like, give me a call. I'm just not super interested in really trying a Cuban when I've got access to amazing cigars down the street.
Mm-hmm. And no, I mean, it's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's just like it's just to say you did it type thing. That's kind of it.
I'm not really into checking that bucket list.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean,
I generally, at this point in my life, I have no desire to leave the continental United States.
Why? You don't want to go burn in Hawaii?
Okay, Hawaii, maybe Alaska. But you know, the United States, I just don't have any interest in, you know, I've been to multiple countries.
You have a passport. Why not?
I had one. But, you know, I've been to multiple countries, you know, and it just, the one thing going to other countries, and maybe it just makes me a stick in the mud, is the fact that I'd rather just be in my own fucking bed. And I'm 6'5". I'm sorry. No hotel room, no matter what country, is ever freaking comfortable for somebody my height and my weight. And no shower.
Russia might be able to take care of you.
What was that?
Russia might be able to take care of you.
Oh, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I heard they have a nice little resort out in the middle of the Siberian wilderness.
I heard that it starts with a G. Is that what I've heard?
Oh, I don't know. I hear there's a train that goes to it. It's like the only stop on that train, but, you know. You go give it a try.
The Gulag Hotel. I don't know. I love
some creative tattoos.
I love cigars, though. That's talk about creative creative tattoos. I still love that movie Eastern Promises.
You just like that one scene.
No. Actually, I honestly, I hate the ending scene, but everything about that movie that I like is the detail they put into his tattoos.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, my favorite story about that is with Viggo Mortensen. Sorry, I keep hearing beeping, so I'm like worrying about I'm going to run out of room. Is Viggo Mortensen, because it was shot in London, went to a restaurant. I guess it was a very Russian restaurant. And when he went to sit down, everybody was scared of him because of everybody knew what the tattoos meant. So nobody was looking at him. Everybody was freaked out by him. And so Viggo, after that, never wore the tattoos outside of the shoot because it freaked out the neighbors.
Did he get a discount?
I don't know. I mean, what happens if they catch you, a famous movie star imitating a gangster? If you said, but I'm Aragorn, the Lord of the Rings, I'm a...
That's what you're going to be saying on your trip out to the Gulag.
They're gonna take you out to the Thames and cut your head off.
Then he would have been like, I almost nuked you when Gene Hackman told me to in 1995.
Should have.
Oh.
Would have made the world more interesting.
Here's an interesting thing. So take this with a... Wow, I'm sorry. Whoever wrote this, you suck. Take this with a Bruce Wayne ego-sized grain of salt. But there are current rumors on the Gotham Wind of Warner Brothers Animations working on a Batman Beyond animated feature film. The rumor primarily comes from Geek Worldwide, who happens to have some possible concept art for the feature, blah, blah, blah. Did you ever watch...
I like Batman Beyond.
Batman Beyond, Matt?
Yeah, I loved it. It was great.
Now, I liked it too. So what do you think? Because I always wanted a live action, but I kind of realized I don't think the art style would work with live action. Because if it didn't match what I saw in the TV series, I don't know if I'd be so happy.
No, it'd be... You gotta get that aesthetic right. The big trick, if you're gonna do it animated, you gotta get Paul Dini on.
Who's that? Hold on. My phone, ladies and gentlemen, this may be the last time that I connect a Bluetooth with this because my phone loves to disconnect it. So what did you say, Matt?
Paul Dini. He was the head writer for the animated series, the one from the early 90s. Also, I don't know if he co-created, but he was also one of the head writers for Batman Beyond.
Ooh.
Yeah. The big one, like a lot of people, if they're not really familiar with his work, I tell them, watch the very first Mr. Freeze episode from the animated series. He wrote that and actually won an Emmy for it.
Yeah, that's actually a really good episode.
Back when the Emmys meant something. So,
yeah, that's been a long time.
My favorite episode, I think, of the original 90s cartoon is I loved the Grey Ghost episode.
Mm-hmm.
That do you remember that one, James?
Yeah.
That's my favorite one, just because not only does it show a little bit of Bruce Wayne's history as a boy with his parents, but it has a surprisingly amount of range for a 90s cartoon. Excuse me, a 90s cartoon.
I have to look it up, but there one that... was my favorite one was the robot one.
Which one was that? Oh, the one. No. Was that the one where that giant computer was making robots?
Yeah. Can't remember the name of the robot.
I thought though. That was that Batman? For some reason, I was thinking it was Superman.
No, it was Batman.
Was it?
But yeah, there was also one in Superman. But that was the You're thinking of the one with the Richard Pryor. That's the Superman one.
No,
makes me think of with the robots.
Because the one I remember, there was this giant computer that somehow could make copies of humans. I don't remember if that was Superman or Batman. I just don't remember. But I think what everybody loves about the fact is it's a very gothic, like I guess they did it with black backgrounds instead of the traditional white.
Yeah, they use black paper to get all that kind of stuff, the backgrounds and key art and everything, and then they animated on top of it.
I really wish they would make that art style, because it's such an amazing. God, I'm not even sure what you would call it. It's a. I don't remember what the actual style of everything is, but it's so.
Oh, like the architecture?
Yeah.
It was Art Deco.
That's it, like a neo Art Deco.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved that aesthetic, even as a little kid to an adult. I love that style.
Yeah, I think that's why I liked the first BioShock so much. It was all Art Deco.
Yeah, I liked all of them, but the first one, the first time you actually get deep into it and you get to see everything, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played it since it came out?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, many times.
So does it still hold up? I haven't played it in years.
I think so. I think it's a really, really, if you're looking to try and do narrative through gameplay, I think that's a really, really great benchmark, to be sure.
I'll have to try to play it again. I don't have a whole lot of time, but I think it would be interesting to play again, because I'm still playing Red Dead 2 a little bit. I'm a tad bit bored with it, mainly because
you gotta power through it. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I that's what I've been told. Part of it is I just don't have time. But yeah, one of these days when I get a couple extra, when I get some free time, I want to play for a couple hours.
You can do like a couple things in a couple hours.
that's pretty much what I've been told.
Yeah.
So James, any?
I was just trying to find that episode.
So got any topic?
Oh, here it is. Heart of Steel.
Heart of Steel?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the hyper-sophisticated robot steals computer technology from Hardak. That's the name of it. I was trying to think of it. Yeah, the Hardak episodes.
Okay, yeah, those are good.
That was my favorite ones.
And I like the first one with, what was it, Goa'uld's daughter?
Oh, Ra's al Ghul?
Yeah, anything was on Ra's al Ghul I liked, especially the first couple of ones where they introduce him, I thought were really cool.
Yeah, and there's the one of my favorite ones from that series was also the Lion and the Unicorn. That was the one where they were trying to get the information out of Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the spy from way back when, and they split up the key codes.
No, I don't remember this one.
Between the two of them? You don't remember that one?
Which season?
The Lion and the Unicorn.
I'm going to have to...
That was the middle of the
because I have season series. 1 and 2.
You remember that one? Up. Hello?
Matt?
I'm here.
Do you remember the Lion and the Unicorn one?
If I got a plot synopsis, I probably would. It's been a really long time since I've seen the series, which makes me sad because I own the entire thing.
Oh, it was actually the last episode of the whole series. Yeah, Red Claw kidnaps an old colleague of Alfred from the British Secret Service to gain access to a hidden missile silo. And him and the other agent from there, they split up the code between them, but the code sounded like gibberish when you only had half. So they were just torturing him, trying to get the information out of him. You don't remember that one? It was the last episode.
I honestly didn't realize it was the last episode.
I do remember that now. Yeah, I do. It's been a while, but I'm like, I do remember.
I might not have actually watched that episode, because for a while around here, it was kind of like, I swear they changed stations and I couldn't get the... There was something funky with it, because I don't think I finished the series, because that one doesn't stand out.
Yeah, that one was a good one. But yeah, those would have to be my two favorite sections of it. I also like the one where he goes undercover at that
the mine.
Yeah, the mine.
Yeah, that's that another great really episode. Cool, that's a fairly early on too.
And he like loses part of his memory and shit.
Yeah,
they did an amazing job on that series, and I mean,
oh, the one with Clayface too. There was for a '90s cartoon, yeah. Which by the way, '90s, especially early '90s, wasn't really known for having great cartoons. I mean, I'm a big cartoon fanatic, but even that, I have to admit, there weren't a lot of good ones. That was a real diamond in the rough because there were so many great stories, and for a kid's cartoon, it was fairly. They had some depth to it.
Oh, dude, and it wasn't. Yeah, I would say you're right with the depth to it. But as far as I'm concerned, it was a complex storyline that they continued with. Because, I mean, they would kind of throw back to different episodes, especially in the Batcave with all the trophies that he had.
The Rogues Gallery.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I'm really happy they didn't do, because I'm kind of sick of it now to some degree, is the continuing story. Because everything now is basically everything.
Yeah, they didn't quite do that, but yeah, they had throwback things.
Yeah, like everything now is basically one giant story, and every episode's, you know, a part of that story. And well, episodic content like that, I like individually contained episodes, especially for stuff like this, because I think it makes you have to work more in some ways. Because if you want to come up with newer ideas.
Yeah, true.
Actually, you know what cartoon talk about Batman I really liked was Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
But the thing I want to point out as far as the Batman of that, the Batman the Animated Series, is it transformed Batman.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it transformed the Joker.
Well, I would
Mark
say...
Mark Hamill will always be the Joker because of that series.
I actually, you know who I think would transform Batman first was Michael Keaton.
Well, because it was Tim Burton. I would say it was Tim Burton, yeah, more than Michael Keaton.
It was Michael Keaton's
director
Batman.
Director of that episode.
I would say
movie.
I would say without Tim Burton's vision of Batman, because the only Batman we had before that was the 60s Kung, you know, yep. Pow.
Pat, zap.
But I agree with you with the Joker. The Joker went from Nicholson's, which I liked that version of Nicholson's version of Joker, but it went from Nicholson's to this very twisted, highly intelligent, basically the mirror opposite of Batman, which I always thought to have the greatest Batman villain, you needed somebody who was on Bruce Wayne's level.
Yeah.
And that's who what he was.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what I didn't want to go as far back as the Tim Burton Batman.
I think you have to when you're talking about that.
But I think you're right. You do have to because as far as I'm concerned, that's the concept that the animated series grabbed a hold of and transformed it into what it was.
If thanks to Matt reminding me that the art style being like a neo Art Deco, that's where that kind of that look came from in the cartoon was Tim Burton's movie.
Yeah.
So I really think without Tim Burton, you wouldn't have had
Mark Hamill and Kevin Connolly.
You know, you might have had them, but I don't think you would have had that level of darkness to it. There's something about
you
that one.
You wouldn't have had the tone. And
that's
and
it.
Burton, yeah. I think he was responsible for Batman becoming what he was in the 90s so quickly. I think we would have eventually got there, and people would have had to look back at Frank Miller doing The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm.
No, yeah, you know what? I wonder if that's where Tim Burton got some of his ideas.
Very loosely, but like it's very much Tim Burton's Batman is Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
He did pay, you know, some homage to what came before him, but no, that's all him. I got no
problem
saying that.
If you go back and look at the opening scene of Tim Burton's Batman, there's the opening sequence, not the actual thing where you're driving through the actual Batman logo thing, but right after that, it's a very animated cartoony sequence in the beginning of it that they introduced Batman as. Yeah. And I haven't seen it in a few years, but I do remember it kind of seeming like it's like it was animated. It wasn't so much live action.
I haven't. If you want to
watch
it.
I think it is. I do too. But, that's kind of where I see the opening sequence of the animated series is the way that they did the actual,
I know what you're talking about. The anyway, only yeah. thing, the only thing I Blah. Think what sucks about, especially if you go into the Batman movies, is the later the live action ones got in the '90s, the more the neo-gothic, all this stuff just got ridiculous. Because even like the Val Kilmer, there's bits of genius
you
in
mean
all
like
of
nipples
them.
On a bat suit.
Yeah, but there's bits of genius. There's little moments and little plot sets and things that you look at and go, oh, that's genius, because like they're trying to keep the style of the first one, but they just all suck. I would personally, what was that?
Oh, go ahead. No, I was going to say, funny thing about that is that Schumacher actually introduced kind of a headcanon that I subscribe to. He said that I don't know if it's a cop out. It probably is, but I really, really like where he was going with it. Was that the Batman Forever and Batman and Robin? He said the way he wanted to make those was if people in Tim Burton's Batman universe went to go see movies about Batman, like how ridiculous they would be.
That actually explains a lot.
Wait a minute. Oh, hang on. So he's blaming Tim Burton fans?
No, I just think that he wanted to kind of come up with some kind of smart thing to say about why his movies are so absolutely ridiculous.
Shit.
And they are. Yeah. And I'm just like, when he said it, I'm like, okay, I think I can reconcile that with that kind of headcanon. And that's the only reason why I hate Batman and Robin with a burning passion. Mostly because I think Clooney is overrated, like you wouldn't believe. But I love the campiness of Batman Forever.
Batman Forever is probably the most campiest one ever.
Which was the one that had Alicia Silverstone?
That was Batman and Robin.
Because the Batman Forever had Danny DeVito and
Batman Returns.
I agree.
God.
Because
I was trying to like block out Arnold and Danny DeVito from the memory
honestly,
of them.
Honestly, Danny DeVito movies. Did a really amazing job with what he was given. Because the Penguin I didn't read the comic book all that much. But the Penguin, to me, was kind of a stupid character. So in my opinion, you gave Penguin a lot more intelligence. It took it away from the gimmick that he was. He still had the gimmick umbrella, but it made sense in the universe it was in. You had a character that had a phenomenal amount of depth and a movie that didn't have a whole lot. And then Catwoman with Michelle Pfeiffer, who her origin on that was stupid, but you had a character that had some fairly complex motivations and a fairly deep, odd character, and it wasn't a stupid movie like Halle Berry's.
God.
I don't know. Did y'all ever get a chance to play the Arkham games?
I've played one of them.
So I don't know if you got to play Arkham City, but the way that they did the Penguin in that was awesome. Because he was like, you know, he's a gangster, you know, he ran a gambling front and all that kind of stuff. And because, you know, of course, he always had that monocle. And the way they did that in the game was he got into a bar fight and somebody shoved the bottom of a beer bottle into his left eye. And it didn't do anything to his eye, but they couldn't remove it because it would have completely severed his like ocular nerves. So he's got this thing that looks like a monocle, but it's a beer bottle. And then to kind of pay a little bit of like a half or some eagle-eyed people, in the very beginning of the game, Bruce Wayne breaks the Penguin's hand. And the next time you see him, it's wrapped up and it looks like the way he has to hold his hand, it looks like a penguin wing.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool. That's a great way to bring some more realism to it. Cause that was the one thing about like Christopher Nolan's universe. I wanted to see him be a little bit more creative, especially on the last one. Cause I hated the last one. So that's kind of cool that they have some, they bring in a little realism into characters.
I just have to say that the way Gotham, the TV show, does the Penguin is just absolutely stupid.
I haven't watched it. I mean, I've watched like clips on YouTube, but ever since you told me about the first episode and you went in fairly in depth on it, I got turned off right away. It's like, okay, I don't need to watch this just because I don't like the name drops.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing I can't stand. I just cannot stand all the goddamn name drops. It's like, okay, yeah, great. We know that these are villains in Batman.
Because at this point, you don't
really need to grow up with every single damn one of them.
Well, yeah, because at this point, everybody knows the Batman villains and they know the heroes. You could have easily done something that was a really good drama. Then as it goes, you introduce a character. Character goes away, introduce another one. You could have had an ebb and flow of a really good TV show, but I don't think it would have made it.
Just look at the damn thing's still on, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but look at the Arrow and you look at Flash. They started out pretty good. Then as it goes on, it gets campier and a little bit cheesier and a little bit crazier because for some reason, nobody wants a superhero movie that has decent storyline that's not fucking campy. Because the first couple of seasons of Arrow, for a comic book movie, were pretty amazing and pretty hardcore.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Arrow was pretty damn good. I just couldn't stand it once his friend's like, oh, don't kill people.
I'm
going to die, but don't kill people.
I'm dead,
don't kill people.
You had Constantine on an episode. I'm still dead. And that Constantine episode was, I love Constantine, I love the character. I even love the guy who played the Constantine, but that was cheesy as hell.
Did you see the show?
No, I heard it was pretty good.
Oh, it was really, really good. They did that character justice. The guy who played him was like Matt something or other. But yeah, it's a shame that they canceled it when they did. But they're kind of including him in, I think they're going to be doing him in DC Animated Universe now, which is...
I heard about that. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, he's in one. He's in that dark, the Justice League Dark.
Yeah, I liked that one. That was a pretty... Well, as far as the animated movies that they put out, that's not one of the better ones.
I don't disagree, but I like him in it because I love... Too. I wish they would make a better cartoon of him because I think there was a cartoon of him that I didn't really dig it because he has, depending on which comic book you listen to, he has a great fucking origin story. Mm. Like one
which
of the
character are we talking about?
Constantine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because John Constantine, in one of the YouTube videos I watched about it, and whatever reboot it was, he had the powers, he summoned a demon, didn't know what he was doing, and all these shenanigans happen. His daughter gets killed or kidnapped, and it has all these rich stories that comic books just don't have. And because it's such a dark comic book, it has such an amazing richness to the storytelling. Mm. You know, because if you take a look, that's my opinion, is darker. I think that's the reason Doctor Strange is such a good comic book, because it's a fairly dark comic book. I think that's why Batman was pretty good for most of its run. Not all of it, but most of it.
Well, the thing about the Doctor Strange comic book is that...
It's strange.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's aptly named. That's about the only thing I like about the Infinity Wars is when... Doctor Strange turns over to Peter Parker and goes, I'm Doctor Strange. Oh, we're doing fake names again? Oh, sorry.
I love that Peter Parker because he's this... Because I originally thought, was it that Toby was a good, pretty good, mouthy Spider-Man? No, this guy takes the cake. He doesn't shut up, which is perfect.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I actually finally just saw, it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I finally saw Infinity War.
That same here.
Sit down and watch it and
I like
it. Everybody, yeah, I liked it a lot. There was one thing I would have changed, and the death that made everybody get post-traumatic stress disorder isn't the one that hit me the hardest, which is really, really funny.
So which one?
Well, yeah, which
so,
death?
So Spider-Man dying, it's like, yeah, that was like, oh, that really, really sucks because he's the only one that acknowledged what happened. But the one that got me the not really like hit me in the feels, but it really hit me in the feels was Bucky, because he was the first one. And the reaction Steve Rogers had when Bucky, he just says, Steve, and he falls to the ground, turns to ash, and Steve Rogers goes over and he picks up two handfuls of his best friend and doesn't say anything. I was like, oh, that's so good. Like, and it's such a quick thing that happened. The only other thing I would have changed was Wanda Maximoff, Scarlet Witch, shouldn't have died because she had to watch Vision die twice in about 3 minutes. And to keep her alive would have made for a really dark story arc in the next movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm. By the way, two handfuls of my best friend would be a really good band name.
Well, right? Punk band, two handfuls of my best friend.
Right.
But yeah, like that's like that. I think that hit me the most because like my best friend, like at this point in time, like we've known each other as long as Bucky and Steve knew each other in the first Captain America movie. Like we've been friends more than half of our lives. Mm. So that, I think that for me, that was kind of like, I was able to relate to that a lot more. And I think that's why it got me. So
I must be a bit of a psychopath because nothing bothered me in that movie.
I've heard
so many people like, oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. And I just watch it and I'm like, meh. They'll die. Who gives a shit?
I'm kind of with James. Like, I watch these movies and they don't affect me. I watch Johnny Five almost die and I'm crying my head off. I watch the movie About Time. It's kind of a chick flick and I start crying in the middle of that movie. But I can watch a guy get his head cut off or his best friend turn into dust. Won't fucking affect me at all.
Yeah. I gotta.
You know, that might be because we've watched Ichi the Killer.
This is true. Oh. Have you seen Ichi the Killer?
I haven't, but it sounds like something I need to.
Oh, yes. Yes, you gotta.
Oh, yes, you should.
You gotta watch it. It's a fun movie. It's a delightful romp. No, he's not.
Okay, good.
Me? No.
I was going to say, don't have your significant other watch it with you.
Did you ever have your ex watch it?
No. That wasn't one we picked for the TV for the podcast.
Now if I could rewind time, instead of picking Under Siege, I totally would have picked Ichi the Killer.
That should have been my rebuttal to Rob picking freaking Das Boot.
Oh, God, I hate that movie.
What, Ichi the Killer? That's a great movie.
No, Das Boot.
Oh, Das Boot, I was going to say. All right.
I love Ichi the Killer, but Das Boot is the most boring boat movie ever. Oh. I've never seen Titanic, and Titanic would have been a delightful romp.
Have you seen Kung Fu Hustle?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, like eight or nine times. I love that movie.
You'll love Ichi the Killer.
Okay, good. Yeah, I love Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer. I love that stuff. I would say it's
like Kung Fu Hustle meets Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, well, hell, I'm going to go and find it right now.
All right.
I'm a little bit off, but I think I could just...
I think I can deal with doing that. I think
we should let him experience it. Then after he watches it, be on the show and tell us what he thinks. Because the way it's going, Ryan's going to miss another time, another day at some point.
Yeah.
God, it's funny. Like the way I've been watching movies 30 minutes at a time. I actually have some video editing to do for a friend of mine in a nonprofit. I'm trying to figure out how am I going to find the time to do it. I want to watch Infinity Wars, but I'm going to have to watch it in 30 minute installments. So I'll start it Monday and finish it Saturday.
It's like a 3-hour movie.
Well, it's like if I wanted to watch the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King extended edition, it's a 4-hour and 45-minute movie. Or 3-hour and 45-minute movie. It's something like that. It's long as hell.
Why? Why would you even do that? I'm in the minority. I think Lord of the Rings is trash. So,
I liked Lord of the Rings. The only thing that I disagreed with Peter Jackson, one of the few things, is I don't like when he gave Aragorn the sword. That's the one thing to me that really pissed me off, because it turned him from the guy that picked up knew his destiny. He picked up the crown, knowing what he was supposed to do, and turned him into a reluctant hero, which kind of pissed me off. Because in the books, he's a guy that it's like, okay, it's time for me to put away the ranger and pick up the king. You know, and the heralds, you know, angels come down and blah, blah, blah. And this one, he's like, I don't want the sword, man.
Take the sword.
Yeah, and that pissed me off. Yeah. And Frodo does not whine as much as in the book as Elijah Woods does in the movie.
Yeah, but I didn't like Elijah Wood until Green Street Hooligans and
Everything's Illuminated. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Green Street Hooligans or Everything's Illuminated, Matt?
Mm-mm. Sounds like more stuff, more homework I need to do.
I was gonna say, you just listen to us talk, you're gonna have a shit ton of homework.
Let me put it this way. Everything Was Illuminated is what really made me love Elijah Woods as an actor. Mm-hmm. It is my favorite movie he has ever done. It's an absolute amazing movie. It's a tearjerker, but it's amazing.
Let me put it this way. So are you a bit of a fan of why am I drawing a blank on the freaking guy's name? Christian Bale.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so have you seen American Psycho?
I have.
And Equilibrium?
I have. I love Equilibrium.
Okay, actually. So these are Elijah Wood's movies of Equilibrium and American Psycho. He plays two completely different characters.
Yeah.
And it's a big stretch on an actor. So that would be what Elijah Wood's equivalent of those two movies are, is Green Street Hooligans and Everything is Illuminated.
I like Green Street. I love Green Street Hooligans, but Everything Illuminated is my, it's pretty much if on my top 10 and my Mount Rushmore movies, it's up there for me.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really good movies.
Oh, it's funny. I got asked the other day, so what's your favorite movie? My response to that line is, what genre?
Exactly.
It's like, no. What's your favorite movie? It's like, no. What genre? Because picking a favorite movie, you're going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to have to decide which, you know, okay, is it this movie? Is it this movie? Is it, you know?
Yeah.
And people hate me for that. It's like, well, everybody has a favorite movie. It's like, I've got a lot, depending on what genre you're talking about. Oh, in which era? Are we talking about sci-fi? Okay, are we talking about 1980s post-apocalyptic sci-fi? Are we talking
about biographies?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, I could bring up Ray as a great biography of a musician, and then I can do a different one if you like.
It's the Buddy Holly story with Gary Busey.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the issue with being a reformed movie geek is asking me my favorite movie is kind of a long conversation.
I still get jaw drops when I try to give people a rough estimate as to how many movies I've actually seen.
Oh, you know what one I've done, and we're actually almost running out of time, is somebody asked what was my favorite movie, and I decided to actually give an answer, and I said Clockwork Orange. And they looked at me going, that's a horrible movie. I said, hold on. If you watch it as an essay, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. But you actually have to think.
I've had somebody tell me my favorite movie sucks once, and I told them that they were objectively wrong. Like, just straight up.
Okay, what's your favorite movie?
Blade Runner is my favorite movie.
You're wrong.
I love that movie.
I have one tattoo, and it's a Blade Runner tattoo.
Okay, so. Are you talking about which version are you talking about?
The final cut.
Ah.
Does that one have the narration?
No. There is no narration.
See, I love... I'm a sucker for narration. Like, I even love the I love the Dune's internal narrative. That's the one made in the 80s.
David Lynch's.
Yes, I love that because I love the internal monologue, and I picked that once for Real Flix Reviews, and I got crap for 30 minutes about, why did you pick such a crappy movie? And why is a guy have such an overdramatic internal monologue? Nobody is that ridiculous.
I must not fear death, fears the mind killer, fears a little death, all that stuff.
Yeah. But the problem is the book. What's that?
Go ahead.
The book the book reads just like that, though.
Oh, I guarantee it does.
Yeah. Did you see that they're actually, that Dune is getting remade?
Yes.
So
can you tell how excited I am by that prospect?
So here's my question. And it really is David Lynch's Dune. Beautiful movie, actually looks like the book reads, but it's as far as the book is War and Peace is from a comedy. And then you had you had the Sci-Fi Channel's Dune, which was almost dead on from the book.
God,
but the graphics were so badly done that they were using rear projection in the walking scenes, and it actually looked like it was a 60s comedy. It looked like Night at the Roxbury when they're like bobbing their head back and forth. So I don't know why the world needs another Dune. Now, is this a different story, or is this just the reboot of the Kwisatz Haderach? Because they don't need to do that. Never, ever.
Oh, that'd be a good album title. The Kwisatz Haderach. That'd be a great album title.
The question.
Well, I'm kind of. Oh, go ahead.
Nobody would be able to spell it.
That's true. I'm actually kind of excited for it because the fellow who's directing it is Denis Villeneuve, who did Blade Runner 2049, Sicario, Arrival. Some of the best sci-fi of the last, you know, few years.
That's
And they're giving it to him.
That's on my list of movies.
Go watch Altered Carbon. Way better.
Honestly, I'd rather. I'm looking forward to seeing the new Blade Runner, but it's another movie I'm going to have to start on Sunday and finish on Saturday. So,
I was going to just bring up a whole nother tangent, but we'll move on.
So, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, I saved the day from James's tangent because the time is telling me it's going. So we want to thank Matt Brewer for saving the day once again and coming in to help this trio, because to be honest, we work better as a trio than we do a duo.
I was going to say, we're basically a duo these days. Ryan, you're a bitch.
So there's a good chance in the near future we may have Matt on more often. And, and I like Matt because you can have a conversation and I'm not trying to go, Ryan. I sound like Stewie Griffin half the time. Going, mom, mother. So ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Matthew Brewer, as always, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.